And we'll be back on Monday. Got a day off today. I'm Dave Cohen. Glad to be spending the first part of your Friday afternoon with you. Hope that you're looking forward to a great and fun-filled weekend and that you stay cool because it's going to be crazy hot. Those heat indices have already topped 105 at the airport in Kenner. 100 now on the North Shore is what it feels like. So stay cool, stay hydrated, and take care of yourself. We have less than 5 hours to go for folks to qualify to be the next mayor of the city of New Orleans. To help us break down what the race is shaping up like so far and probably will be what it's shaping up like after all is said and done is Ron Fauché, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how are you? Happy to be here.
Glad you're with us on this Friday. And you've been watching the candidates line up. We saw a big surge of all of the candidates we expected to qualify to be mayor of New Orleans jump in the race on the first day of qualifying. What are your takeaways so far as we have seen Helena Moreno, Arthur Hunter, Oliver Thomas, and Royce Duplessis as the kind of big name headline candidates?
Right. I mean, those are the four candidates who are or have been elected officials. They've all been elected to either state senate, the city council, or a judicial position. Three of the four have been elected statewide. One of the four has been elected to a large state senate district in the middle of town. So they all have experience winning elections in New Orleans, and they have name recognition, maybe not fully citywide yet, but they do have a base of name recognition, and they have shown an ability to raise money in the put together winning campaigns. So those are the four people to watch.
We know that the pre-qualification polling all said that Helena Moreno had a huge lead, both in people who were saying they would vote for her before anyone had actually signed up to run, and a huge lead in campaign finances. She's raising far more money than anybody else. She clearly is the candidate to beat and the one that others want to try to force a runoff with, correct?
Yeah, that's true. And the poll I did indicated that she had 47% of the vote. Oliver Thomas had 22, and Arthur Hunter had 9. And now, of course, we have a fourth candidate in the race that we didn't have at the time that poll was taken. So it changes thing up. And after the qualifying is over, we'll have a lot of other polls coming out showing different things. But I think the four candidates you mentioned are going to be the top four. My guess is Helena Moreno is still in a strong first place position, but if she's put into a runoff, then the race starts all over again. Runoffs are not usually continuations of primaries; they're new elections, and of course anything can happen.
We know Helena Moreno, originally of Mexican descent, but Caucasian, and at least in perception, a lot of people see, hey, she's a white woman. Oliver Thomas and Arthur Hunter and Royce Duplessis are all black men. Does Duplessis' getting in the race further divide the black vote, or does it take away some of Moreno's support as well, or both?
Well, we've yet to see. The polling I had showed Moreno getting 72% of the white vote, and Oliver Thomas was only getting 3% of the white vote, and Arthur Hunter was getting 5%. Now, Oliver Thomas was leading the African American vote, but Helena Moreno was running second, and a pretty strong second. So she was able to cross the racial line there. But at that stage of the game, the race looked more like a Moreno-Thomas race. But now it's a race of Moreno versus three African-American candidates. And so the dynamics of that are different than what it was.
Yeah, I know you can't read the tea leaves. You haven't actually polled it. But where, how do you see this unfolding now with this dynamic and presuming we don't have any surprise, well-funded, well-recognized candidates here in the last few hours of qualifying?
Well, I think the big thing right now is whether Royce DuPlessis can build a campaign that will allow him to get more votes than Oliver Thomas. Most people thought that Moreno would either win in the first primary or she would be in a runoff with Oliver Thomas. Now, with Royce DuPlessis in the race, all he has to do is get one more vote than Thomas, and he's in the runoff. And I will tell you that even though we have not polled it, so I can't talk about the polling of it, but I can tell you talking to politicians around town and, you know, political analysts and people in the campaigns, they believe that Royce DuPlessis would be a much stronger candidate against Helena Moreno than Oliver Thomas would. Now, that's the conventional wisdom. It's not necessarily guaranteed to be correct, but that's what people think. And that's why Royce DuPlessis' entry into the race was so important, because it sort of made it a new ballgame. And so I think what you're going to see is you're going to see Thomas and DuPlessis fighting it out for second place. And the question is, how much damage do they do to one another, making the runoff? And of course, there's always Arthur Hunter. At this stage of the game, he hadn't raised a whole lot of money, but he's a player, and he was getting votes. You know,
and any vote he gets is a vote nobody else gets.
Exactly, that's 9% of the vote he was getting there. This race has been really shuffled in the last few weeks, and we don't know where it is now. Of course, that makes it really interesting.
Go ahead. Let me ask you about that political wisdom that seems to be, and obviously not based on polling, but Royce DuPlessis. I wonder how much name recognition as a state senator, clearly the DuPlessis name well known in New Orleans. But how much name recognition does he have versus an Oliver Thomas, who now was a very well-known city council member, got all the publicity, good or bad, of being convicted and going to federal prison, coming back with this story of a resurrection and being able to win again and once again return to the city council? It seems many more people, and if we're just judging on name recognition, know Oliver Thomas versus Royce DuPlessis.
Well, I think that's true, that Oliver Thomas has been around politics a lot longer than DuPlessis. And so he does have better name recognition. But one thing I always say is, name recognition is something in politics you can buy without going to jail. It's something that if you run enough TV ads and radio ads and social media and newspaper and knock on doors and put signs around, you can get your name recognition up. I mean, it takes money to do it, you know, but it can be done. It can be bought, you know, through campaign activity. So if the pluses can raise money, he can get his recognition up. But the big thing to watch when the polls come out is whether, you know, at the negative ratings, and to see what DuPlessis has in terms of his negatives versus Oliver Thomas's negatives.
Yeah, and Thomas comes in with those built-in negatives, potentially having already been convicted of federal corruption and done time in federal prison. Others may argue, hey, he served his time and he has every right to now move forward with his life. But there is that. And I think I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. The fact that Royce DuPlessis 6 months earlier said, no, I'm not running after considering a bid for mayor, and then switched his course and said, you know, I changed my mind, I am going to run, probably got more publicity and attention from traditional media and social media because of that unique nuance. If he had just in the first place announced, yeah, I'm running, probably would not have gotten as much coverage.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I also think that there was, people tell me around town, and I noticed it too. And I put one of the columns I wrote that the mayor's race was off to a quiet start. Not much was going on in terms of what the voters saw. You know, sure, the candidates are working hard and raising money and doing things, but it hadn't really engaged the voters yet. And that there was some boredom that had set in, that people were sort of saying, well, you're not particularly impressed with anybody. A lot of voters were saying that, black and white. But then when DePlessis got in, it was sort of like, oh, wow, well, here's somebody new. Let's take a look at it. So I think the timing, the way he did it, probably worked out pretty well for him. But he still has to wage a battle. He still has to put a campaign together like everybody else. And, you know, at this stage of the game, between him and Thomas, the question is who makes the fewest mistakes? And so they have a battle in second place going on. And that's I think, will be the focus of this race for a while.
Talking to Ron Fauché, when we come back, I want to ask him about a comment he made a moment ago that before DePlessis got in the race, it was the common thought was that either Moreno wins it in the primary or she goes to a runoff with Oliver Thomas. Well, now DePlessis is in the race. How does that change that conversation? And is there still any chance that Moreno wins in the primary? I also want to ask, why is Moreno so far out in front, both in raising money and in the polling that was done before DePlessis decided he was going to indeed get in the race? What about Helena Moreno is it that has been appealing to voters so much that she's been the front runner from the get-go? We'll ask those questions of Ron Fauché when we come back, and yours as well. You want to share a thought, ask a question? You can call us or text us on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Yeah, I'll be back at 5 a.m. on Monday morning. That's when I'm normally on the radio. But since Newell Norman needed a day off, here I am at 12:24 in the afternoon. And so glad that Ron Fauché is with us, political analyst and publisher of Lunchtime Politics, on this final day of qualifying for the race to be the next mayor of New Orleans. Ron, what is it about Helena Moreno that has had her from the get-go the candidate to beat and the front runner in this race with the highest polling and by far the most money raised?
Well, a few things. Number one, she has been a state legislator. She has been in city government as a city council member at large for a couple of terms. She is a very intelligent woman. She has excellent media skills. She was a former TV reporter and anchor, I believe. So she knows how to handle herself in public very well. And she has also positioned herself as being independent of Mayor LaToya Cantrell's administration. And of course, Mayor Cantrell's ratings are now not very good. Her negatives are very high. So candidates who have positioned themselves against Cantrell, probably benefit from that to some extent. And of course, she's the major white candidate in the field. So, based on the poll I had, she received over 70% of the white vote. So she's getting a bigger chunk of the white vote than any other candidate is. And she's getting a bigger chunk of the white vote than any candidate, black or white, is getting of the black vote right now. So you add all that together, and it puts her in first place.
You had said earlier that before Royce DePlessis decided he would indeed run, that the thinking was that Moreno could win it outright in the primary, or that Oliver Thomas was fighting to force her into a runoff with him. Now DePlessis is in the race. Do you see a scenario with the three or four, if you include Arthur Hunter, major candidates, where Moreno can win the primary without a runoff?
Well, it's still technically possible. I mean, the last poll I had showed that, she was getting 47% of the vote, which is, less than what you need to win in the primary, of the people who are decided, have decided at that point. she was getting 60% of the vote. So it showed that it was possible. She could have won in the first primary. But I think now with Duplessis in the race, the odds are go way up that there will be a runoff.
So possible, but less likely.
Yes.
You talked about
everything. You know, everything is possible in this in this business. And even though, you know, we're talking about these four candidates, we don't really know whether all four of them will stay in the race in the next few hours. You know, there's been all kind of rumors about one of these candidates may get out and run councilman at large. So we'll have to see. But I think the way we're looking at it is probably, you know, pretty solid for the time being.
If one of the candidates were to do that, which do you think it might be that would get out of the race? And they would have to do it in the next, you know, 3.5 hours, really.
Yeah, well, they can. Anybody can get in a race and get out whenever you want. But if you want to get out of a race and then run for something else, they'd have to do it in the next few hours.
Right. So you said there's rumors of that out there. Any specific candidate rumored to be considering such a thing?
I'd rather not say. I mean, I think it's probably pretty obvious.
Yes.
who it may be, but I don't want to be spreading. As a former mayor of New Orleans once said, you know, don't believe any false rumors unless they come from me. So I'd rather not spread any rumors that may be false.
Well, it gives us an opportunity to quickly take a look at the council at large races. And it is interesting that there's not a whole lot of name recognition in Division One. You have Delisha Boyd, Matt Hill, and Matthew Willard. Those are the folks who have qualified for council at large so far in Division One. Division Two, J.P. Morrell appears to be well situated as he is qualified to run for reelection, and the only candidate running against him is someone named Gregory Manning. So there may be an opportunity in that Division One for someone with significant name recognition if they do want to be a council member at large.
Yeah, the you know, both Delisha Boyd and Mac Willard are substantial candidates, and they have the ability to run, you know, major campaigns. But like you said, their citywide recognition will be relatively low, so they have to build up their own awareness to you know, to be able to start getting the kind of votes they're going to need to win the race. But that's one race to watch for the next few hours, because if there is a big surprise in the council races, it could be a major candidate popping down in that race.
In the Division
One. One of the mayor candidates or another member of the city council or whatever, that's always still possible. Now, J.P. Morrell, the incumbent in his seat, is considered to be the prohibitive favorite for that, although Reverend Gregory Manning, who's running, he's no slouch as a candidate. He's somebody who can get some votes. So there could be something of a race there, but Morrell would have to be handicapped as the clear favorite.
You talked a little earlier about one of the things that Moreno had going for her was her positioning herself as being not LaToya Cantrell, as having not allied herself with the mayor, who has very high negative ratings right now and very low positive ratings. But I kind of got the feel, and we've only had one public forum where we had three of the now four major candidates, because there were only three at the time, but they all seem to be very much trying to stake out some of that territory that they're not LaToya Cantrell.
Yeah, and my theory on the election is the candidate who projects as the candidate of change, the candidate who is seen by the voters as being the real change candidate, is going to be the candidate who will win the election, and so that I think is something to watch, and I think it's very important.
We're talking with the author of Lunchtime Politics and the political analyst Ron Fauché, who you hear often on the Newell Norman Show about the citywide elections, particularly the mayor's race coming up. And I welcome your questions. If you want to jump on the live line at 504-260-1870 or comments and share them with us or text us at 504-260-1870 and the Elkhorn Hart Jewelers talk and text line. There are a dozen candidates for mayor. We only talked about four of them. And it sometimes I get a little bewildered by people who choose to run in an election where they have to know that they have no chance of winning. Have you ever considered the psychology or talked to any of these candidates, particularly some of the perennial candidates? Manny Chevrolet Bruno, I think, for the last six election cycles that I can remember, he's run for mayor, and I don't know why. Is there any logic in that that you can comprehend?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why people run for office who have little or no chance to win. One reason is the candidate, think they do have a chance to win, even though the political people and pollsters may not think so, but they think they have a chance to win, even though it may not be correct. Some people are in the race because people put them in the race, you know, because they want to use them to draw votes away from some other candidate. So that's another possibility. Some candidates who can't win talk about, you know, they want to talk about issues that they feel like the other candidates aren't talking about. And I think that's the most legitimate reason to run. If you say, well, nobody's talking about all these important issues, I'm going to have to run and try to make these things issues. So there's a lot of reasons for it. Some are ego. Some are pure political. Some are kind of crazy. But some of them, you know, may have an intelligent and useful reason to get in the race.
Yeah, I haven't looked at what the qualifying fees are lately, but you do have to pay some money to get your name on the ballot. But hey, whatever. And Manny waited till today to qualify, so I guess there's our surprise of the day, is a guy who's qualified for every mayor's race I can remember since I've been doing this is back on the ballot. Was a little surprised to see Eileen Carter qualify to run for mayor. Common wisdom says she's not going to garner a whole lot of votes, but she did get a whole lot of attention when she was one of the two chairs of the campaign to try and get Mayor Cantrell removed from office. So at least she's got some name recognition.
Yeah, and, you know, she's part of the Carter political family. I believe it was her sister who served as a state senator and her father as a tax assessor in town. So you know, there is name recognition for that. And of course, a role leading the effort to recall Mayor Cantrell, like you said, got some attention. So I guess there is some recognition there. We don't really know yet what kind of a campaign she runs, but we'll have to see.
Yeah, she was not successful in removing Mayor Cantrell from office, but that bar extremely high. Recalls are very rarely successful in the state of Louisiana, and lawmakers don't seem to be wanting to make it any easier to remove them or their colleagues from office. So I don't know that it ever gets any easier to recall a candidate from public office in Louisiana. Ron, anything else that I haven't asked you about that you want to touch on as we watch the waning hours of qualifying and head off into the race with the primary on October 11th for the next mayor of New Orleans?
Well, I think, you know, the election really starts now. We've had candidates preparing to run. I think now they're running. Now they're going to be public. The media is going to start covering them. They're going to start attacking one another. You know, it's time for voters to take a hard look give this race and take it very seriously, because most mayors of New Orleans serve for two terms, and this person may be the leader of the city for the next 8 years. So you want to pick the right one.
Yeah, and especially in a day where you have clearly a lot of people questioning or maybe experiencing voters' remorse with the highly unpopular ratings that the current mayor is seeing, particularly here in her second term. Maybe that's just highlighting the fact that you might want to really make sure you make the right decision. Ron, thank you so much for joining us. I know we'll be talking to you throughout this campaign as we head towards that October 11th primary and probably that November 15th runoff. Have a great weekend, and thanks for joining us here on WWL.
Thank you.
I'm Dave Cohen, in for Newell Norman. We got some time for you at 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Art Jewelers talk and text line. You know, Ron talked about the reasons people get in the race, and I'm going to be a little skeptical here. Someone named Gabrielle Harris Thomas has qualified to run for mayor today. And you just wondered, did someone say, hey, your last name is Thomas, get on the ballot, and maybe some confused voters will vote for you instead of Oliver Thomas. They'll just click Thomas. And since her name starts with a G, it comes before the O in Oliver's name, so I guess she'll be above him on the ballot. Is that a scheme to just maybe take enough votes away from Oliver that Royce Duplessis can force a runoff with Helena Moreno? I don't know. Just putting it out there. I'm Dave Cohen. Whatever you want to talk about for the final 20 minutes of the Newell Norman Show, call right now, text right now, 504-260-1870. Love to hear what you think of the mayor's race. Talked earlier about why the population of New Orleans is dramatically dropping in Southeast Louisiana. It's consistently losing population on this World Population Day. Is there anything that can be done to really reverse that? And we also talked about birthright citizenship. And you heard from a professor of law at LSU in the first hour of the show saying it's highly unlikely that President Donald Trump's executive order stands up to a constitutional test and that it will remain the law of the land is the expected outcome of those born to any parents in the United States, whether they're here legally, illegally, born here, raised here, naturalized here, or whatever, that every child born in the United States will continue to be a U.S. citizen under our current law without a constitutional amendment. Sound off on that or anything else for the last couple of moments of our program here at 504-260-1870. 1242 on your Friday afternoon, getting ready for the weekend. It's going to be hot. It's going to be sticky. Not quite as much rain, but you could still see a shower or a thunderstorm. Mike and Kenner, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, Dave, I'm doing good. I just wanted to call in and just comment that, you know, I'm very cognizant of not going into the city and spending my money, knowing that my tax dollars, or my, you know, the sales tax and all that, is going to basically in a sinkhole that no one knows where it goes to, because nothing's getting done. Traffic's terrible, streets, all that good stuff. Utilities.
Are you able to live and work in Kenner, Mike?
Well, I spill into Metairie, so all of Jefferson Parish. But you know, sometimes I want to go to Cafe Dago or, you know, some of these places where they don't have that type of dining in Jefferson Parish. So I do go and dine from time to time, but I tried not to, like I said, knowing that I'm spending my money in a city where the people care about. Or not only the people, I'm sorry, some of the politicians and the mayor don't care about.
So when we have a new mayor, do you anticipate that changing, that you'll be more open to coming and spending your money in New Orleans?
I'll give it some time. I think hopefully if I think is going to win, we'll win. I think she'll be a better suit than the mayor that we have, because the mayor we have set us back years, set New Orleans back years and years from what she didn't do. The best thing she did was hire the police chief, and that was even a struggle for her to do.
Yeah, and that'll probably be, I think, without much doubt, when history looks back on New Orleans under Mayor LaToya Cantrell, that there was significant and successful crime reduction. And thanks to her eventual choice as police chief, but you're right, it had to be created a new system that required city council approval in an effort to make sure she didn't make the wrong choice.
Right, and I think city council in New Orleans is pretty decent. They're on a good track. It looks like they want to be, they want to hold the people accountable, and they want transparency. But when you have a mayor like this, it makes it awfully hard when she's declaring emergencies for no reason.
Well, Mike, I hope that it goes the way you want and that you come back and get to enjoy the things that the city of New Orleans has to offer. I get the negativity about New Orleans, particularly by people who move to or live in the suburbs, because it makes sense, and there are a lot of things to be upset about and concerned about. That having been said, I drive into the city almost every day because I work in New Orleans, even though I live now in Tangipahoa Parish and lived in Metairie for 25 years. But I've never cognitively or intentionally said I don't want to spend my money in New Orleans, that I don't want to eat while I'm here. I don't want to enjoy the things New Orleans has to offer. I think it's still a great city. I think it still has a lot of attractive qualities to it. I think it still has a lot of great people, a lot of great places, a lot of great culture. And I don't know that we punish the growth of the city on who it was who happened to win an election and become mayor, but I get it. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. 504-260-1870. An interesting text comes in related to the conversation we were having earlier with Greg Rigamer about how the population of New Orleans and the population of Southeast Louisiana continue steady declines. You know, 20 years ago, before Katrina, we were already in decline, but it's been dramatically increased in the last couple of decades. Before Katrina, New Orleans had 455,000 residents. Now, the census estimates that at 360,000. That's a huge drop. Population for the metro area down 180,000 in the last 25 years, going back to 2000. And now the New Orleans region has less than a million people. And that's difficult. It's hard to sustain and maintain progress when you don't have growth. It's hard to get the things you want to attract people when you don't have enough people to fund the tax base to pay for the things that it takes to make the region and the city and the state more attractive. Someone texted us and said, my three kids were in high school when Katrina hit. I raised them largely on my own, encouraging them to attend college and be employed out of state. Grown now, they are thriving in North Carolina, Nashville, and Toronto and Atlanta. One of them apparently lives in both Toronto and Atlanta, splits time. The text goes on to say, each of their jobs are different, but none could be supported in this state. They are certainly sentimentally attached to NOLA, have kept their 504 numbers, and visit for the fun holidays here. I miss them and visit them often where they are. But all the same, I'm happy they're not here, particularly as the 20th anniversary of Katrina approaches. They could not have the lives they have now here, unfortunately, but true. They go on to say, before it's said and done, I'll be moving too, to be nearer to one of them. And I hadn't even thought about that spiraling of the fact that as children leave to pursue work activities, as young adults leave to find what they deem as a better life for themselves outside of New Orleans, outside of Southeast Louisiana, outside of the state, that oftentimes their parents may follow them away because they don't like being away from their children. They love New Orleans and what it's about, keeping their 504 numbers. And that's an interesting way to judge if someone has a sentimental attachment to their hometown, this person notes. That's a lot to think about and digest, but I think very telling. And that they said that they want and wanted their children to move away so they could have a better life is very telling as well. You want your kids to move away? Would it be better for them if they move out of state once they are old enough to be on their own? This person wanted their kids to move away so they'd have a better life. Do you want your kids to move away so they'll have a better life? 504-260-1870. We'll take some more of your calls and comments on the text line at 504-260-1870 after this, and check in with Scoot, see what he's working on. From the mayor's race to the politics and of demography and the population to talking about the 14th Amendment and the latest ruling on President Trump's executive order to try and get rid of birthright citizenship. Been a great show. Don't forget, you can have the entire show delivered directly to your phone absolutely free. You can listen to all 3 hours, one specific hour, select the hottest clip. All you got to do is download the Odyssey app and follow the Newell Norman Show. It's that easy. We realize you can't always listen to the entire show live, so Odyssey makes it easy to listen when you want, how you want. It goes for this show and all the shows on WWL. And we also believe in the power of being everywhere. You can listen to WWL anytime, anywhere on the Odyssey app. You can also listen on the iHeartRadio app and the TuneIn app as well. To me, Tommy Tucker, Newell, Scoot, Sports Talk, whatever your cup of tea. Eric, thanks for calling. You're on WWL. What's up, Eric?
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Yeah, I remember right after Katrina, I was seeing a lady who was receiving home health services, and she proudly stated that, "I tell my children to leave New Orleans and don't come back." And then the lady became upset when she could not receive a home health occupational therapist. And I told her, well, that would happen when you tell people not to come back. When you tell people not to come back, you're going to have less services available. So I didn't really understand why people were telling people don't come back. Then they become upset when they don't have the services that they think they should have. So to me, it's just
you see a catch 22 there.
Against yourself.
Yeah, but I think I understand why parents would encourage their children to find what they perceive as a better life elsewhere. That makes sense, doesn't it, though?
Well, then, but don't get upset when you don't have the services for yourself. Because she was fighting against her own best interests. You know, telling people to leave, and then you get upset we don't have the services that you want when you're still in town.
Yeah, you're right. And it's we're seeing the steady decline, and there's no doubt that there is some difficulty there in what advice you give your loved ones versus don't leave, stay and try to make this place better. Do you want to issue that challenge? I don't know. Text messages are coming in on the Ogwenart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, and overwhelmingly, parents are telling us that they have or will encourage their children to leave to find a better life. One person texts us and says, all seven of my childhood friends have moved away. I'm the last. You can bury my bones on Monkey Hill. All right. Thank you for that. Another person says, I told my kids when they left for college that if they find a better life and work and living somewhere else, please make a better life for themselves and future families. I also said not to be worried for me that they are the future. Another person talks about how they encouraged all of their kids to leave and also says they will be leaving once they retire from their job to be closer to their kids. And this is a theme we're seeing repeated over and over on the text line, that people did tell their children that they should go somewhere else to make a better life for themselves. I did not discourage my children from leaving. Three of my four children still live in Louisiana. One did move away recently because the kind of work she does, she could not do here. She got a PhD in chemical engineering and wanted to do research for a federal laboratory. We don't have a federal laboratory here. My other three kids are here and are happy. So I think it's individual, and I encourage my kids to do whatever makes them the happiest in the long run. But I don't know what the solution is to the brain drain and to the constant population loss, but clearly our leaders haven't been able to crack that nut either and figure it out, because as we see on this World Population Day, the population decline is steady, constant, and there's no indication that that will change anytime soon. What will change soon is I'll leave and Scoot will be here. What you got coming up, Scoot?
Oh, and our show does nothing but bring people to New Orleans. I mean, people listen to the show and they just can't wait to move here. Not really.
You're doing your part. I like that.
Listen, no, honestly, though, but you know, I get it. I mean, I'm from here, but I have an ambivalent, you know, relationship with New Orleans. I love it. In some ways, I hate it.
You know,
but
it was nice.
It's great.
Yeah, I told Tommy that it was so unique and nice that all of us got to share a dinner together the other day. All of the WWL talk show hosts had a dinner together, and you said something that I hadn't even realized. You went away. You tried to make a living and find success elsewhere.
Yeah.
But you've been back longer than you were gone.
Yeah, that's right. I have now been back longer than I was gone. And I was gone for a while, so that's great. Hey, new Superman movie is out.
Oh, yeah.
Do we need another Superman movie? We'll talk about that. Also, a few political things to get to. There's a lot going on. Psychedelic Furs at House of Blues and the Beatles Fest at Jefferson Performing Arts Center. So a lot to get to.
Tommy is gone for the day. I'm Dave. Usually I'm handing off to Tommy. Scoot is up next. Have a great weekend.